Welcome to The Swing.
Canadian political analysis for a global audience.
Our take on the political and global issues shaping your world. I'm Yaroslav Baran.
I'm Heather Bakken. And today we're diving into the machinery of Canadian democracy with a review of the 45th Parliament under the reigns of Prime Minister Mark Carney during his first session. We're going to talk about substance, style, and signals. Yaroslav, you're a seasoned political and parliamentary expert. How did the spring session look?
Well, the House of Commons and the Senate are both now adjourned, and the government successfully passed its priority legislation. So that's one check in the, well done column. Mark Carney also hosted a reasonably successful G7 summit, despite a short attendance by U.S. President Donald Trump. But there were also numerous bilateral meetings that advanced common trade and foreign policy interests, such as greater trade diversification, which has become a pretty big policy priority of late. One of the big achievements of this past spring, just before the summit actually, was the announcement that Canada is going to reach the NATO-required 2% of GDP minimum threshold for defense spending this fiscal year, and that came along with a $9 billion check for military spending. We also saw significant new appointments of senior personnel in and around the Carney government, including a permanent chief of staff in the Prime Minister's office, a new clerk of the Privy Council, Canada's bureaucrat in chief. Other transitions have been continuing. For example, parliamentary secretary positions have now been announced by the Prime Minister. House of Commons committees have been set up, and all ministers' offices finally now have an appointed chief of staff, so they can begin the business of, building their own respective offices, something that's going to continue throughout the summer. Now, there were a few issues management files. That's Ottawa code for, crisis management. A few hiccups emerged. For example, pretty widespread criticism from the business community over a deferral of a federal budget until the fall. There's also an auditor general report detailing significant time and cost overruns with fighter jet procurement, and some fresh criticism over the ArriveCan app development scandal and things like that. But most of those were weathered reasonably well. It frankly helps being new when you can take credit for all things good and point your finger at the last guy for any emerging criticism that came before. Now, by and large, overall, Canada-U.S. trade issues really did consume the dominant portion of the government's attention. It was the backdrop for everything that happened over the last couple months. And that's now led to a self-imposed 30-day deadline, mid-July, to conclude a new trade and security deal between Canada and the U.S. So that's a quick whirlwind tour.
Yeah, quick whirlwind tour, but also the card table was flipped just before Canada Day with the U.S. president weighing in that extended that timeline. What have you observed in terms of Mark Carney's governing style?
Well, he's definitely reintroduced a more formal and traditional and businesslike tone and approach. He's insisting on a Bay Street business culture, including business attire, black shoes, full suits, leather file folders among senior officials, that sort of thing.
It sounds like a proper school uniform to me.
Hey, I'm not opposed to that at all.
Look, me neither.
There's also more reliance on traditional news media rather than formats such as Facebook or Google Hangouts to make government announcements. So again, old school, traditional, button down. There have been deliberately few to no media leaks. So government announcements are actually made at press conferences, rather than pre-leaking everything to your favorite journalist that day, and then the press conference becomes sort of a follow-up formality because it's already in print everywhere. We've seen strong people recruited for key lieutenant positions. I'd mentioned earlier a new chief of staff and a new clerk. Both hail from the business community, where they were both very senior and very successful. Take no prisoners execs, and they're not the only ones. This is in contrast to a younger, arguably more sycophantic profile of political staff that we saw under the Trudeau government. where there was an expectation that they be chiefly executors rather than senior advisors.
Is it fair to call this a bit of a decentralization in terms of style?
Yeah, I think so. Or at least the early suggestions would say so. It's more of an autonomous approach where senior lieutenants will be given the breadth to do their jobs, but along with that comes strong expectation for accountability and performance. It's really sort of a Bay Street business world kind of approach to running government, and with a get things done tone underlying all of it. That also means we shouldn't be surprised to see weaker ministers get shuffled out as time goes on if they don't perform according to Mr. Carney's high and professional standard. There have been some other changes along these lines too. For example, no EMO staff in Liberal caucus meetings. So this augments MP's role as a sounding board, and it fosters an atmosphere of open and free speech, you know, without staff sitting at the back of the room taking notes on who said what and who challenged the prevailing orthodoxy. It's a refreshingly less partisan tone vis-a-vis the opposition parties. So the overall partisanship level appears at least now to have declined a little bit. There's more of a collaborative environment between the parties.
Okay, so that's kind of the stylistic side of it. Let's pivot to the political side and help us unpack the legislative progress. You mentioned the government passed its priority legislation. What did they actually get done?
Well, the first thing they did was they passed a motion accepting the speech from the throne, you know, the government's agenda that was articulated in a speech read by the king. So that was officially adopted by the House of Commons. So the agenda was rubber stamped. So that's done. And, you know, these things aren't always a guarantee in a minority setting. The most important piece of legislation that politically, at least, that was passed was the so-called Bill C-5, the One Canadian Economy Act.
Yeah.
It was fast-tracked through the House. It got through the Senate. It is now law. It does two things. Part one creates the Free Trade and Labor Mobility in Canada Act, and part two is the Building Canada Act. So it was a two-pronged thing that was really a signature part of the Liberal Party's campaign platform.
And this is all also the fast tracks are done in the national interest.
Yeah. I mean, they had a pretty rapid run, but there was a self-imposed deadline that the Prime Minister said that this must be passed by Canada Day. It was a political commitment, and he saw to it that was done. There was another signature bill, C-4. It hasn't passed yet, but it's on its way. It's at least in committee by now. What it does is it cuts the lowest income tax bracket. And also introduces, a temporary federal sales tax rebate for first-time home buyers. It also repeals the consumer carbon tax. So some of the dollars and cents elements in the Liberal platform. So that was also a political priority.
Yeah. So C-4, let's just let people know that that's the Making Life More Affordable for Canadians Act is
yes.
What it's also known as.
Yeah, exactly. Two other things. Probably the most important thing that the government actually needed to do, not politically, but actually, was passing supply.
Critical.
And this they did. I mean, the government cannot run out of money. The public service needs to keep the lights on, keep gas in their vehicles and pay salaries and so on. So they did this. They passed two supply bills, the main estimates, as well as a special supplementary estimate supply bill, specifically earmarking or cutting that $9 billion extra defense spending check. So both of those are done. So that's high fives all around for the public servants who need to need this sort of thing to keep their operations going. And there are a few other bills tabled. One of them correcting loopholes related to inherited citizenship, C-3. Another one, more controversial, an omnibus affecting asylum claims, security and intelligence sharing with the United States. It's got implications on privacy law. It's got anti-trafficking measures. It touches on data collection and investigations. So that one's going to have a bit more of a difficult ride, given some of the civil liberties implications inherent in that. And finally, Bill C-8, which creates new legal tools to regulate telecom infrastructure. So that's a snapshot of the overall legislative agenda. But the things that they passed were the two supply bills and the big bill, the big beautiful bill for the Carney government, Bill C-5, the One Canadian Economy Act.
Okay, so now that the trade file was really the backdrop for everything that happened this spring and early summer, where do things stand with the tariff wars, and where do you think it's heading?
Well, Donald Trump's doubled steel and aluminum tariffs, you know, and they're both set at 50% now as of early June. They really pose an existential threat to both the steel and aluminum sectors in Canada, given the high dependence of the Canadian sectors on the U.S. export market. Just to put that in perspective, last year, 91% of Canada's steel exports went to the U.S. 94% of Canada's aluminum exports went to the U.S. So that's it. Also, looking at it, you know, inversely, over a fifth of the steel that the U.S. imported came from Canada, and half of the aluminum that the U.S. imported came from Canada. So this is a highly traded commodity between these two countries. So a 50% tariff is just devastating. Now, this is not yet resolved. It really comes down to the bigger trade negotiations that are still underway. As noted earlier, there's now a self-imposed deadline of mid-July to reach a new economic and security agreement between Canada and the U.S. Prime Minister Carney and President Trump have had numerous discussions on this over the phone. And meanwhile, their respective negotiating teams are going full tilt to try to make that happen. There was a hiccup that we saw last week.
A hiccup?
Yeah.
That was a big, loud burp.
We can call that a near derailment.
Yeah.
You know, the Canadian Digital Services Tax emerged as a significant barrier. Donald Trump canceled future trade talks over this. And then, you know, we saw the Canadian government cave and drop the tax just to get the talks back on track. So, but now they are back on track. Meanwhile, in other trade related issues, you know, back to the issue of interprovincial trade barriers, while we're lessening our dependence on the U.S. as an economy, I think we've got to give props to Ontario. Ontario has more than one third of Canada's population, and the government of Ontario has been leading the way on interprovince bilateral agreements to eliminate those domestic trade barriers. So far, Ontario has signed a complete, total free trade agreement with every province other than British Columbia, Quebec, and Newfoundland and Labrador, and they're still working on trying to make that a clean sweep. So that's where the real action is on facilitating greater internal trade, while Mr. Carney's negotiating team is working on a new Canada-U.S. deal.
Yeah, and I would say with the Canada-U.S. deal, you don't put your cards on the table at the beginning, right? So I wonder what they have up their sleeve to create leverage, because what we saw on June 30th was that the implication was that Canada has no leverage. The U.S. president said, we didn't have any cards, we have no leverage, he had all the cards. But there is a back and forth that's going on in any negotiation. You save your best card till the end. So we don't really know yet.
I mean, we do have leverage. There's critical minerals. There is uranium. There is potash. I mean, these are sectors where Canada has a disproportionate amount of global supply.
And energy.
Energy, fresh water, etc. Now, some of these things we don't necessarily want to trade freely. Fresh water has always been sort of a taboo. Supply management has always been a sacred cow in Canadian trade negotiations. But there are still cards to play. I think many people were surprised to see the digital services tax dropped right away at the first hint of trouble. But on the other hand, the stakes are so high that perhaps they absolutely had to, just to get the trade talks going again.
I think when you crunch the numbers, probably relatively speaking, that was something that they could let go of. Can you explain to us what power committees hold during a recess and what can actually get done?
Well, parliamentary committees have been set up. Most of them have not met yet, other than maybe a quick, you know, organizing meeting, elect a chair, elect vice chairs, you know, exchange cell numbers, that sort of thing. But they have been set up. And that's significant because in case there are emergencies, wildfires, natural disasters, you know, anything big or a new trade deal that needs scrutiny, for example, they can operate. So the fact that they were formally constituted is significant because as Parliament goes into a two and a half month recess, something can happen on some level. The Finance Committee can meet, the International Trade Committee can meet, if the need arises. So, I mean, that's about all there is for now. They don't have agendas yet, but they can be activated on a moment's notice.
Okay. So Parliament's scheduled to reconvene mid-September.
Yep.
What should we be watching for in the interim, both in Ottawa and in constituencies across the country?
Well, on the constituency side of things, it's really, you know, we're going into the flapjack and barbecue season where MPs are back home to reconnect with their constituents, do all the country fairs, and the Calgary Stampede is going to be the who's who of Canadian political life, and that's just around the corner. So we're going to see a lot of that kind of thing, sort of informal, ditch the suit for a couple months, put on your jeans and do the people circuit. In terms of other stuff going on, it's significant that the Prime Minister has called a by-election that is going to be contested by Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre. So as we've seen so far, he has been leader of the Conservative Party, which is the official opposition, but he hasn't been leader of the opposition since the election because he lost his own seat. This is an opportunity for him to get back into the House, and that by-election has now officially been called. It's going to be in August, so barring any, you know, disastrous, you know, cataclysmic surprises, we should have him back in the House when Parliament reopens on the 15th of September.
So it sounds like Mark Carney had a pretty successful first session in Parliament. What would be your overall assessment?
Well, you know, the government under Carney is really shaping a distinct brand from that of Justin Trudeau. It's very action-oriented, non-ideological, business-like, and more cooperative. There have been a few minor learning curve hiccups, but it's generally recognized by observers that they're not serious, and he is being recognized for his air of competence. Public opinion polling would suggest a comfortable degree of trust and patience for the new government and a high level of support as Mr. Carney's team gets their feet under them. Overall, Canada-US trade negotiations have been dominating and will continue to dominate for the next month, if not much longer. We've got this intense trade negotiation going on, and that's going to be the biggest deal this summer. It's a highly stable minority. We definitely should not expect any surprises, any quick fall of the government anytime soon. It may very, very well even run for 4 years. It's totally possible. Trade is really going to dominate the agenda. Bilateral Canada-US trade, international trade, but, you know, multilateral international trade on the diversification front, and also domestic trade, dismantling those final trade barriers. But, you know, early suggestions would indicate that Mr. Carney's got a lot of scope to keep doing what he's doing. And he's frankly also benefiting from a bit of a Nixon goes to China phenomenon. He's been really implementing a largely conservative platform, you know, using the social capital of the liberal brand as well as a sense of urgency, you know, the whole Trump thing, in order to be able to implement this conservative agenda. So that's in the mix as well. And early suggestions would say that that's probably going to characterize a lot about how he governs for the next up to 4 years.
He's a pragmatic operator, that's for sure.
Yeah. Now, mind you, if the economy tilts into recession or if there's any lasting damage from the tariff wars, you know, all bets could be off and we could be looking at a much shakier kind of situation.
Which is essentially the world everybody's living in these days. So that gives us more to talk about next week, Yaroslav. We can't predict what that may be, but in 2 weeks, it's probably going to be about trade.
I would guess so, yeah.
Okay. Well, enjoy the good summer weather, and we'll be back next week.
You got it. Thanks, Heather.
Bye. Thanks, Yero.
Bye.